Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church Podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
We're in Hebrews chapter 12. We're going to be looking at verses 1 through 13 today, so I invite you to turn there. This thing with the book of Hebrews, you think about believers that are scattered, they're running, they're scared, they have people that don't like them very much, not exactly different from today. And so it's like, do I stay or do I go? You have people that had come into the church, and after coming into the church from a Jewish background, a lot of pressure from family, friends, and surroundings to come back to what they previously knew. Some of them did, apparently. And imagine being their friends. You know, imagine being the ones that are watching all of this happen because of persecution. People are saying, this isn't worth it. And so they walk away. And that can get you in your spiritual life, when you see this enough, that can get you to a place where you start to measure some things out for yourself, because it can be incredibly discouraging to see what we witness as a failure in a person's spiritual life. That's a downer, right? This is what's going on in these people's lives. And we saw last week, especially we looked at the people that lived out their faith. You know, in chapter 11, you have this living testimony of people that, in spite of enormous obstacles, were able to accomplish great things for God. We need those stories, right? Because we have plenty of the other ones. And this is where Hebrews chapter 12 picks up. And it says, Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Therefore. Anytime you see the word therefore, the word is you find out what it's there for. What is it there for? And the answer is because of everything that has been mentioned before what is being written right now, therefore. I want to give you an example. I want you to hear the contrast in what you find in chapter 11 before. Let me just read it for you as I start in verse 32. What more can I say? Time is too short for me to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions. That's impressive. Quenched the raging of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, gained strength in weakness, became mighty in battle, and put foreign armies to flight. That sounds impressive, doesn't it? But then you also have to keep reading. Here's your contrast. Women received their dead, raised to life again. Other people were tortured, not accepting release, so that they might gain a better resurrection. Others experienced mockings and scourgings, as well as bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They died by the sword. They wandered about in their sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, afflicted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and on mountains, hiding in caves and holes in the ground. All of these were approved through their faith, but they did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us, so that they would not be made perfect without us. Do you see two different groups here? On the one hand, you have people that are pushing away armies, and on the other hand, you have people that sit and are just constantly afflicted and destitute. Believers both, two completely different kinds of stories. Do you see it yet? Some of them, when you think about it, through faith, they saw God do some pretty extraordinary things. Others of them went through life and didn't see the same kinds of things. They didn't see the extraordinary stuff. They saw destitution. They saw persecution. They saw scourgings. They saw, as Hebrews says, their friends being sawn into because of their faith. They didn't see the other stuff. Those verses always make me just kind of sit and go, all right, doesn't that really seem true to life? Some of you would say the same thing about yourself. Some of you have seen some incredible things that God has done. Others of you would say, I wish that I had seen what such and so saw. I wish that I had similar experiences too, and then you fill in the blank, because they can come back with these reports of amazing things that God has seen, and you've never seen those kinds of things. Instead, maybe what it is that you've seen is, because of your faith, you have seen persecution and affliction. Think about it. It's very likely that these people that are mentioned here, they probably prayed very similar kinds of prayers, don't you think? They're people. I mean, this isn't fiction. These are people. Don't you think they prayed the same kinds of prayers? As persecution was coming, don't you think that they probably prayed that God would, one, maybe do something remarkable through it? Or maybe, number two, just deliver me from it. Don't you think that they prayed that? I can't help but think that they did. You know why? Because they're people like me and you. And so they're praying for something, and they had completely different kinds of experiences in their future. So this morning, I want to offer you some helps to your faith. Because when you think about Hebrews is written to people that are largely struggling. Here's what I'm going to suggest to you today. At some point in your spiritual life and walk, you are going to struggle too. You're going to do it. The question isn't, are you going to? You are. It's, how am I going to respond to the struggle? That's the only question that we have. We have a choice that we have to make. We might be like some that are mentioned here that just basically, because of hardship and persecution, they walk away. They say it's not worth it, and so they're out. And then we have others that say Jesus is supreme in everything, and he is worth every moment, every act of devotion that I could possibly offer to him. He's always worth it. And saying that, not knowing what's coming, and even as it comes, he's worth it. Those are the choices that we have to make. But one thing that we do know is that in following Jesus, it's not going to be an easy road. Think about the way that chapter 12, verse 2 says it. It says, keeping our eyes on Jesus, the source and the perfecter of our faith, for the joy that lay before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Now again, one of the things I mentioned to you before is in the reference to sitting down, you sit down when the job is done. And so when his job was done, he sits down in a place of privilege. He sits in a place of honor because he obeyed the Father. But what I found interesting in this is in the Greek it says, you know, looking ahead, or some of your translations will say fixing your eyes, or some of your translations say keeping your eyes on Jesus. It literally means looking away. That's what it means. I took the girls to get their flu shots, highly recommend for the flu season that's coming up. So I take the girls to get their flu shots, and one of the girls got a little nervous about it. How many of you still get nervous about shots? Can I see your hands? See, when I was growing up, I had to get 5 shots a week for a lot of years. I'm done with needles. I'm just going to say it. You do that for 6-7 years, and like, if I never get poked again, I'm good. I'm totally good. But take them in. One of the girls got a little bit nervous about what was happening. Here's what I did. Part of the problem was she watched the other one get a shot, right? And that just didn't go well, right? So here's what I did. So I kind of took her. The nurse was over on this side, and I took her hands, and I said, I want you to look at me. And so the nurse is over on that side, and I'm over on this side, and I basically completely had her look away from what was going on and look to me. This is an idea of what Hebrews is trying to say. You look away from things. It doesn't mean you deny it. By the way, she's still got a shot, right? It doesn't mean that you deny it, but instead it's like saying looking off into the distance. Here's another way of getting it. Is, you know, not that you're seeing something that Jesus is doing now, because you may not see it, but instead looking through your circumstances to 2 things that I want you to think about this morning. One is that you always look to his promises. You look through your circumstances, number one, to his promises. And this is what was mentioned. He is the founder of your faith. He's the one that started it. He's also the perfecter of your faith. He's going to finish it. You look to that promise as you endure trials. I mean, the cross reveals something very important to you when you think about it. There is no measure, there is no distance that is too great for what the Lord would do for you. We should never forget that. One of the things that he has done for us is endured a death for us. So for whatever it is that we're going through in the here and now, that's kind of an easy road for him to see us through, given what he's already seen for us through. The cross reveals something important. It reveals his commitment to you. And so as you go through whatever you're going through, you have to look through it or past it. First, to his promise, but second, look to his life. We're supposed to take something from Jesus' life. If you see verse 3, it says, consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself so that you won't grow weary and give up. He endured what? He endured lots of parties, right? He endured a ton of fanfare. He did have some fanfare. Let's not kid ourselves. But what did he really endure? Hostility from sinners against himself, undeserved, so that you won't grow weary and give up. And Jesus even tells us this in John chapter 15. Remember, he says, the world will hate you. This is Jesus. The world will hate you. But remember, they hated me first. All right, so here's the thing. Part of what this is that this is supposed to orient our expectations on what it is that life is going to be like when we really follow Jesus. What is it going to be like? The world will hate you. They just will. Why is that? It's for a number of reasons, but part of which is the story that you have from Jesus stands in contrast to the world, and the world's not going to give up. It just isn't the way that the world works. We resist. We fight. I did that in coming to faith. I didn't come to it easily. I fought. That's the way that the world is. Some of the reason that people walk away from the faith is we think that, well, if I just give myself to Jesus, then everything's going to kind of iron itself out because, you know, I've got him fighting every battle for it. I just kind of throw everything on him. He's going to go, no, Jesus is saying the world hated me. We don't need to forget the cross. That was suffering. And he says, what should your expectation be in your obedience to me? And the answer is probably suffering. There's probably going to be some of that mixed in there. Set our expectations on that. Here's another way of looking at it. Everybody was after Jesus. Everybody. You had the Pharisees, the religious elite. You had the Sadducees, who didn't seem to have much of a religious bone in them, but they had they were people of rank. You had the Romans, because he was a bit, you know, of a contrarian, so they didn't like him either. Here's a way of putting it in your mind's eye today. I want you to imagine that Donald Trump gets together in a remote location, of course, with Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and other people, and they say, we have to work together. How many of you would have ever expected something like that to happen? Because I don't. But that's exactly what happened with Jesus. People that were so opposite, and the way that historians describe them is just flat out hate for each other, said, we got to get together on this one because this guy's got to go. He has to go. Everybody was after him. And here's the thought. Each person in the Bible that made waves by following Jesus ended up in a place that they didn't want to be. Let me just give you one example. How about Peter? You remember Peter? For some of us, we remember his great failure. That's not bad because we do need to learn from the failures of other people. But Jesus gives this word to Peter toward the end of his ministry. And he tells him at the end of John's gospel, you know, Peter said, you know, I love you, right? And Jesus is saying, feed my sheep. Ultimately, what Jesus says to him is this, Peter, by following me, you're going to be taken to a place that you don't want to go, and your arms are going to be outstretched. Now, some have looked at the end of John's gospel and said that this was basically a prophecy of the fate that was going to befall Peter, where he was ultimately one day going to be crucified, just like Jesus was crucified before him. You're going to be taken to a place that you don't want to go. Jesus is telling him in advance. By the way, just like he told him in advance of some other things that were going to happen, and he says, and you're going to deny me. And Peter says what? Not me. You think Peter's paying attention yet? Because he did it, and now he's saying, you're going to a place that you don't want to go. Here's the thing, and this is the question that people have asked since. What is it that is so transformative about Jesus in his resurrection to Peter? And the appearances to Peter, they were so transformative to him that he went from a man that would deny him to a girl to a man that would not deny him in front of people that he knew could put him to death. That's how powerful of an experience Peter had with Jesus. And Peter, from that point forward, saw it as worth it. He went from coward to courage. And because of Jesus. So we do need to look at that, but the other thing that we need to see is this. Sometimes we need to trust the parenting of God. This is something that you see if you look, for example, in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 7, and Hebrews chapter 12, verses 11 and 12. Let me read them for you. And you have forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons. My son, do not take the Lord's discipline lightly or lose heart when you are reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and punishes every son he receives. Endure suffering as discipline. God is dealing with you as sons. For what son is there that a father doesn't discipline? No discipline seems enjoyable at the time. And of course, all of you are like, now that's true, right? I didn't get disciplined and I enjoyed it. No discipline seems enjoyable at the time, but painful later on. However, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Therefore, strengthen your tired hands and your weakened knees. Strengthen them. Some things I want you to think about this morning. There are two analogies that Hebrews gives us when it comes to the way that God relates to us in our circumstances. And here's the first. It's an analogy, so it's like, right? So Jesus is like a life coach. He is like a coach for you. I don't know how many of you have had great coaches in your past, but a great coach can be a life changer for people. It's true. When you think about the conditioning that a person had, none of us sit there and go, you know, I just kind of want to condition myself just because. Right? That's just not the way that most of us work. Instead, we have somebody that's on the outside that knows the goal that is in mind, and they know how to get there. They take the steps that there are to get there. And what do? They try to get the athletes in the best shape that they can possibly be so that they are sustained for the game, the whole game. By the way, not just three quarters. I'm just saying. I'm throwing that out there. For the whole game. And that requires conditioning. The word that we get in verse 11, the Hebrew word there is gymnasio. Sound like anything you've heard of before? The gym. It's where you go to get ripped, right? As all of you are going to go do starting tomorrow. You go to the gym. Your circumstances, this is the picture that it's trying to create. Your circumstances are your gym. When you think about this, do I have anybody out there that likes to work out? How about this? Do I have anybody out there that works out and you don't like it? Can I see your hands too? All right. Can I see that one more time? Just people that work out. Can I see your hands loud and proud? Okay, good. Because the first time I said, I was like, nobody here works out. All right. Your body's a temple, people. All right. So think about this. Your circumstances are your gym. How many of you would say while you're working out, you know what? I feel stronger. That's actually not when you feel stronger. When you're working out, you are actually tearing your muscles down. You get on the other side of a workout, and if it's a good one, you get on the other side of a workout, and you're beat. You are tired. Your circumstances are like that. When you think about it, working out, you don't feel stronger. You feel weaker. You become stronger with the process. Your life circumstances are supposed to be like that. They take you from where you are to where you ought to be, so to speak, conditioned for life. That's one example. Jesus is like a life coach. Here's another one. Jesus is like a father. He's like a father. I had a friend when I was playing baseball, and I'll never forget it because he did not have a father. But the nearest father figure that my friend had was our coach. Was our coach. Our coach was the one that showed him how to do life. You have these two examples of the way that God is trying to relate to you today. Sometimes there are difficult circumstances that seem to be breaking you down, but in fact, if you allow them, they build you up. That's the gym. But he's like a father. And the examples that you see in both verse 5 and verse 11, we find the word discipline and child. Discipline and child. It's talking about how a good parent disciplines a child. In verse 10, by the way, the point is you do this so that they can share in holiness. That's why you do it. Some parents discipline a child, put it in parentheses, really because they're just angry. And that's not what's being talked about here. God's discipline is not primarily about punishment. It's about development. And there is a difference. Let me make some distinctions for you that I think are important this morning. Here's the first. What is discipline? Discipline is corrective action done to change the negative behavior of the offender. You're trying to discipline the offender. It's done for the benefit of the offender rather than the offended. That's discipline. So when you have a father that is disciplining a child, it's for the benefit of the child, the offender, right? The child is the one that did, and then you fill in the blank. And the father is the one that steps in, or the mother, but the father is the one that steps in and disciplines the child for the good of the child. What's the idea? Here are the life choices that you've been making. Here are better life choices. Discipline is important. That's different than punishment. The distinction is clear. A punishment is action done to make an offender repay the debt that they have incurred because of the wrong that they have done. See the difference yet? And there's yet a third distinction that we need to keep in mind this morning. Sometimes it's just, what are the natural consequences of the choices that we've made? And that's different even still. That would be like a chain of events that occur because of our poor choices and actions. It's not like God's up there going, you know, now I'm going to give Jeremy a canker sore because he sassed somebody on Tuesday, right? It's not that at all. Nothing. You know, sometimes you sit there and you hit your hand with a hammer and you go, oh my gosh, that may not be divine judgment. You might have been lazy with the hammer, right? Natural consequences. That's even different still. There's a book I'd encourage you to read. It's called Boundaries. Dr. Cloud and Dr. Townsend wrote this book some years ago, and they explained it like this. Discipline and punishment have a different relationship to time. Punishment looks back. It focuses on making payment for wrongs done in the past. And here's the thing. Christ's suffering was payment for our sin. So God is not here, believers, please hear what I'm trying to tell you this morning. God is not here trying to punish you. The punishment for our sin was met at the cross. It's not what Jesus is trying to do. Christ's suffering was payment for our sin. Discipline, though, is looking forward. And the lessons we learn from discipline help us to not make the same mistakes again. So God disciplines us for our good, that we would share in His holiness. And by the way, none of you here, myself included, are done. None of us here are there yet. Every single one of us has something that is in the way of us fully participating in the relationship that we could possibly have with Jesus, every one of us. Is it pride? Is it gossip? What is it? I don't know. You need to fill in the blank, but that's the difference. Punishment is about condemnation. Discipline is about correction. Punishment is about being fair. Discipline is about doing what is the most helpful. Punishment is about making the situation right. Discipline is about helping the person get right. Punishment often flows from anger. Discipline flows from patience. Punishment is a response when the relationship is broken. Discipline is a response to a relationship in working to put it back together. Punishment is about taking. Discipline is about giving. Punishment is easy to give, but hard to get anything back from. Discipline is hard to give. Parents, are you out there? Discipline is hard to give, but easy to get benefits back from. Punishment is a sign of hate. Discipline is a sign of love. Those are the differences. And our response to what God is doing is really important. It's not a mistake in His plan because we don't yield to it. Verse 5 even gave us this warning. Don't take lightly God's discipline. Don't take it lightly. Here's some ways we take it lightly. We just fight like crazy to make sure that we're justified in our own eyes. As long as I'm right with the way I'm looking at myself, I'm good. I am good. We need to start looking through a different lens and say, how does God see the choices that I'm making? Don't take lightly God's discipline. By the way, the word there, take it lightly, that's the same word describing how Jesus saw the cross. For what He was trying to do for you, He saw the cross as light. You see it? Not of much weight compared to what He's trying to gain by it. Instead, we see the discipline and say, I'm going to take that light. When we take it light, there's no correction. There's no change. Nothing. Instead, we see something from Jesus that I think we're supposed to lock in on. That He endured all of that. You saw in verse 2, there was a joy that was set before Him. I've tried to figure that out. What joy? What joy? He already had heaven. It's not like He was coming here to go, you know, earth is just better. Have you seen the people there? That wasn't it. What's the joy? And I think the answer is a relatively simple one. The joy set before Him was knowing that by enduring all of this, what was broken and lost can be reclaimed. The joy that is set before him when a sinner comes to him, when the world is put back together, the joy set before him. But here's why we're not there. And I want to go back to verse 1, if you'll let me, and close with this. Why am I not there? Why are you not there? Part of it is because we're not honest with ourselves, right? But there are two things that are mentioned in verse 1 that I think are worth writing down this morning. Here they are. Remember what it said? Let us lay aside every weight and the sin that so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that lies before us. Famous verse, two distinctions. Why it is that we're not fully in sync with Jesus. One is because of sin, and the other is because of weights. And those aren't the same thing. They're not the same thing. So, first question, what sin is keeping you from knowing Jesus? I'm not going to ask you to say it out loud. I'm going to ask you to be honest. What is it? What is the sin that keeps you from really knowing Jesus? And the second thing this morning is this. What, and I don't mean sin keeps me from knowing Jesus. Let me give you an example. The Olympics, athletes. These are some of the best athletes in the world. They train for 4 years before they compete. Some of these people compete for like a minute. They train for 4 years and they compete for like a minute. I've always looked at that going, man, that's really something. That's a lot of commitment, isn't it? But I want you to imagine this. They removed everything. Back in the early Olympic Games, they removed everything that kept them from being the very best. When you think about it, they would fail the no shoes, no shirt, no service thing at most of our restaurants because all that was off. They took it off. They saw all of that as a hindrance. Imagine a swimmer at the Olympics coming out and lining up to swim, and they're wearing a winter coat, they're wearing flannel pants, and they have hair like Rapunzel. Can you picture that? Now, no rules are being broken to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge, anyway. I need to go study the Olympic rules. It's not against the rules, but it's certainly not a good means of winning. Isn't going to work. You're going to get smoked. I mean, most of the differences that you see in these swimmers is like a nanosecond from like that. That's it. So I want to come out in a coat and flannels and long hair. It doesn't set us up for success. Those are weights. You get it yet? It's not necessarily sin. We just lack wisdom in the choices that we're making. Think about it like this. Sometimes we have activities that in and of themselves, they're fine. They're totally fine. They're not sinful. However, they're also not helpful in accomplishing a whole lot for Jesus. Right? Like, I'll give you an example. I know you're wanting one. Here you go. Like playing video games while your paper is not yet written. I'm not even looking at the students right now. All right? Not even doing it. I'm looking over here. Playing video games while your paper is waiting to be written. Here's the thing. And they end up getting a B when an A was totally attainable. Right? Students, I'm going to look at you for just a second. Because I'm going to say something about these people. Right? Did you know that some of them actually do procrastinate at their jobs? Did you know that? I know they're all aghast over here. They're like, what? The project could have been attainable in a shorter amount of time had what? We removed some distractions. Job could have been done. Or the job could have been done more efficiently with less cost and more effectiveness. Had what? Had they not been distracted by fill in the blank, whatever. You get it? We can put weights on ourselves all the time that keep us from fully having the relationship that we could have with Jesus. Sometimes, folks, it's sin. This is when we stand in direct contradiction to a command that God has given us. And sometimes it's weights. When you're on your fifth episode of whatever your show on Netflix, there may be a better way to use time. That's a weight. You get it? And what is the word giving us here? Friends, lay aside the distractions. Put them aside. All right, so these sports examples that are given in Hebrews chapter 12 reminded me of something from 1992. It's one of the most powerful moments in Olympic history. Some of you might remember it. Derek Redmond was one of the fastest sprinters in the world. And he was expected basically to walk away with pretty much every medal that he was set up to run. And if I remember, I was the Barcelona Olympics. He was basically set up to run away with every medal. But there was something that happened, and I wanted to show you the race this morning so that you can see it. And this is how we're going to close. Do we have it ready? And if so, could you play it for me, please? One of the most powerful moments in Olympic history. You have a man that knew he wasn't going to win, but he was going to finish. He was going to finish. You had a father, that was his father, that came out of the stands and threw his arm around his son and saw him to the finish line. If there's any image that I hope that you would take this morning that helps you see what is in Hebrews chapter 12, I hope it would be that one. Because you have someone that is committed to the task to finish. And maybe this is what happens with your faith, friends. Maybe it is you hobble over the line at the end, but get over the line. That's the story of Hebrews chapter 12. And you have a father that will walk with you just like that. God is good. I cannot promise you that the world will be good to you. What I can promise you is that Jesus is worth it.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.